Hello and welcome to another edition of Indians on Deck, the Let's Go Tribe Prospect Podcast. I'm Matt Schlichting, and once again, we are here with Brian Heminger. Brian, what's up?
Oh, not too much. It's been an exciting week in the Indians farm system, so ready to talk all about it.
Awesome. So to get things started, we're going to go ahead and take a look at the top 10 prospects in the system, sort of based on what the consensus picks are out there. And first off, we have Tristan McKenzie again, and while he is injured and not pitching at the moment, we did get a little bit of news. Antonini said, quote, he's still a couple of weeks away from beginning a throwing progression, and that was back on the 11th.
That's a better sign than Clevinger.
Yes.
He's at least allowed to look at a baseball.
He is allowed to think about the game. Next up, we have Nolan Jones. How did he do this week?
He's still having some issues with his power. But, I mean, he's getting on base at a ridiculous clip. So in 34 plate appearances, he only batted .231, but he had a .412 on base percentage, and he had no extra base hits. So a really ridiculous slash of .231, .412, .231. But, hey, if you're getting on base at a over 400 on base percentage, that is elite, elite rates. And that's what Nolan Jones does right now. And his eye is really, really good at the plate. And it's only a matter of time until he starts tapping into some power again, because last year he hit like 19 home runs. So I'm sure that'll come.
Yeah, we know the power is there. It's just a matter of starting to get the ball in play a little more. Next up, we have Tyler Freeman, and he had himself a week.
Yeah, he was okay. You know, he only batted .500, and then with a .600 on base percentage for the last week, I have him listed with a 4 doubles, 6 runs scored, 3 RBIs. He walked 4 times. This is a guy that was not known for walking. He was like the Astudillo of the Indian system. But he's adding that to his game, which is amazing. And the best part about it is a lot of times when people increase their walk rate and increase their patience, that means they're going to see more strikes. They're going to strike out more. He struck out 2 times this whole season, which is just insane. So Tyler Freeman's WRC plus for the last week, what would your guess be? I mean, you know, 100 means that you're league average, right?
Right. And he had the supremely satisfying slash line of 500, 600, 700.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like 275.
293.
I like
it. Yeah, he also stole 3 bases and got hit by 3 pitches. So
get on base however you can, right?
Yeah. But yeah, Freeman had himself a week. He was by far the top Indians player of the week. I'm sure he'll be a Midwest League player of the week. I mean, he's after a slightly slow start where he just had some bad, unlucky BABIP situations. He wasn't striking out or anything, but he was just putting the ball in play and not getting hits. Now he's just been tearing the cover off the ball, and he's got his batting average up around .313. I mean, I think that average is going to keep climbing because this kid can hit.
And our fourth prospect is Bo Naylor, and he had a little bit more struggling to go through last week.
He definitely has been tasked with the toughest or most aggressive assignment of any player in the Indian system as the first pick last year, and he's catching it at the single-A full season level, so he skipped low-A entirely at Mahoning Valley, and after a pretty good start to the season. He's fallen off a little bit now. He's batted .188 this last week, and that's actually what his batting average is for the whole season too. And I mean, he is still seeing the ball pretty well. On base percentage is almost 100 points higher than the batting average, but he definitely not really putting the ball in play as much as he would like, especially for a guy that's kind of known as a really good offensive catching prospect. So just got to give him time, though. I mean, this is a very aggressive promotion. So I think by the midpoint waypoint of the season, he'll really have settled in a little bit more.
Yeah, and I would rather, with a guy like him, give him the chance to try to perform at the higher level rather than It's like if they really felt he was just going to destroy low A, there's not really any reason for him to do it. And it's not like his on base percentage for the season so far is still .316.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's been a complete disaster. It's just a matter of starting to get a little bit more momentum.
Exactly.
George Valera is our number five guy. We will not see him until a little bit later this season once some of the other leagues get kicked off. So we can move on ahead to Bobby Bradley.
Yeah, and Bradley had himself a pretty good week. He batted .286 with a .348 on base percentage, hit a home run, had three doubles, and that's pretty much keeping in line with his performance for the season as a whole. So he's off to a good start, although a lot of it's BABIP related because his BABIP is pretty high right now and his strikeout rates are about the same as they were last year, so no real changes there. So I'd like to see him start to strike out less, but it is good to see that he's making strong contact and getting a lot of extra base hits. So, because he's definitely the top slugging prospect in the system, and when he puts the ball in play, good things happen.
Yeah, and I hope he keeps it up because I'd love to see him get a shot, maybe a little bit more than a cup of coffee this season with the Indians. And I know it's a little crowded around, you know, first base DH, but still.
I'd say it's not out of the realm of possibility that he is one injury to a Jake Bowers or Carlos Santana, or maybe even, say, Hanley Ramirez keeps struggling and they pull the plug on that. He's one of those type of situations away from getting called up. So just keep doing your thing, Bobby Bradley, because it would be nice to see that that power in the lineup, although another left-handed bat, which we don't really need.
And it feels like at some point they're just going to trot out an entire lineup of either lefties and switch hitters combined.
Probably, because there's just something about it. The Indians just cannot get any right-handed bats in that lineup that they don't just sign as a veteran free agent from somewhere. That's what it feels like, at least.
Our next prospect on the list is Brian Rocchio. He, as well, is in one of the lower leagues, so we will be able to update you on him once they get started. Luis Oviedo was next up, and yeah.
After starting the season with two spectacular starts and 10 shutout innings over the course of those starts, and I think the first start was no hit, this one was ugly. It was about as bad as it gets. It was a Carrasco-esque from last week. He went 2/3 of an inning and gave up 6 runs, all earned, 3 walks. Just really, really, really rough start. But I'm sure that he'll bounce back because, I mean, you don't do as well as he did in his other starts. And I don't know. I don't know if it was a mechanical thing or what it was, but he had an awful, awful start that I'm sure he never wants to experience again, and I don't ever want to see again. It was real bad.
Well, to put it into some perspective, just how good he was to start the season, he has 0.2 innings where he gives up 6 runs, and his ERA is still only 5.06 for the year, even though his ERA for that game would have been what, like 40?
81 for the game.
Yeah. So he's sitting on 10.2 innings pitched now. Two of those starts, fabulous. One of them, hopefully, we never have to speak of it again.
So yeah, the less said about that start, the better. I mean, it was not pretty.
Ethan Hankins is another one of our guys. We're waiting for the short seasons to pick up. So that brings us to Sam Hentges, who...
It wasn't terrible.
Had another start.
It was his best start of the season, which is nice to say, but it also still wasn't a good start. I mean, it was okay. He went 5 innings, gave up 3 runs, had 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. His other starts before that have actually been pretty brutal. Not quite Oviedo's most recent one brutal, but they've all been like pitched 4 innings, gave up like 5 or 6 runs type of situation. So he's really been having a lot of trouble with his control. As it says here, his whip on the season is over 2. So he is just allowing base hits and walks. He's still striking out, guys, almost 10 per 9 innings, but he really needs to get that command under control, because as a big tall lefty with really good breaking stuff and decent velocity. Like, everything is set up for him to succeed, and he just needs to succeed right now and start succeeding at least. This is his first taste of double A, so I mean, maybe this has just been a difficult adjustment for him, but I definitely like, I am glad to see that he did better in his last start, but I mean, he still has a long ways to go before getting talked about as somebody the Indians could use this year, which I think some people were thinking was a possibility coming into this season.
Yeah, I know, even if it was just out of the pen, there was some talk about that. So yeah, those are our top 10 guys, not for the season, but prospect-wise. As far as this past week goes, we'd like to highlight five guys that really stood out to us and had excellent performances. We have already talked about Tyler Freeman, who of course is the number one pick for someone that dominated the week that was. But who else do we have, Brian?
All right, well, we had Oscar Mercado of spring training infamy, where the Indians fans on Let's Go Tribe just completely fell in love with the kid. A right-handed bat, which is great. We got him from the St. Louis Cardinals last year, and he had a great week this week. He batted .316 with a .409 on base percentage. Also stole a home run defensively. And then today he had himself a game. He went 3 for 4. And so these stats aren't included in the slash line, I don't think, either. So today he went 3 for 4 in the Clippers game with a double, a walk, and 4 stolen bases. 4. He has 7 already in the season. If he keeps going like this, the Indians don't really have a right-handed outfielder right now, and he's definitely making a case for himself, especially after the Luplo experiment flamed out. Because, I mean, you look at the Indians outfield right now, they have 4 left-handed hitting outfielders. You don't really need 4 left-handed hitting outfielders. So it wouldn't hurt to have a righty in there and maybe take one of those lefties out of the equation. Just throwing that out there, Tito.
The Jordan Luplo experiment sounds like a 70s prog rock band.
Speaking of Luplo, he did hit a home run today for Columbus.
Hey!
As did Eric Stamets. Maybe they just needed a little more seasoning.
The next guy that we singled out for this week was James Karinchak.
Yeah, and we've talked about James a little bit last week, but this guy is incredible. We took him, I think, the same year that we had Bieber. I might be wrong. And he, at first, had a little bit of trouble. And he was coming off of an injury. And the last season, he was sensational as a reliever. And this year, he has been a revelation. Entering his most recent bullpen performance, he had struck out every out that he recorded the whole season. And then his most recent one, he went 1.1 innings pitched and struck out 3. So he some guy actually put the ball in play against him, but he hasn't given up a hit. He didn't walk anybody this past week. No runs, obviously. I mean, he has been absolutely unstoppable. The one knock on Karinchak coming into this season was, can he get his walks down? Because they knew that he was the top strikeout percentage guy in the Indian system, and he has got his walks down. I think he walked the first guy he faced to start this season, and he hasn't walked anybody since. I mean, he has been absolutely lights out. The one issue is, I do think he has, during this past week in his 3 appearances, he did have a wild pitch in each appearance. So that is something to consider. You know, he is a little bit still effectively wild, or at least maybe his stuff is so filthy that double-A catchers can't catch it. James Karinchak, if there is an opening in the Indians bullpen, he might be getting called up sooner rather than later. I mean, he is absolutely disgusting. Plus us, you know, upper 90s with nasty breaking stuff. So this is a guy that I think is going to be an impact player for the Indians bullpen for years to come.
Hey everybody, I'm Neil I. Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, and this is The Vergecast. Vergecast is the flagship podcast of The Verge. Every week, we cover the latest in tech news and reviews. We take a critical look at what is going on now and next in the world of tech. The show is hosted by me, our executive editor, Dieter Bohn.
Not your friend.
And Paul Miller.
It just feels like there's something wrong with all computers, though. Don't you think that sometimes?
We do that on Fridays. And on Tuesdays, we have an interview episode. I've been talking to all kinds of influential people in and around the world of tech. We talked to Microsoft founder Bill Gates about his philanthropic efforts.
You can design systems without having to reveal any individual's particular medical record.
Journalists and academics like Lina Khan, who thinks that we should be doing way more to break up giant companies like Amazon and Facebook.
I think in hindsight, allowing Facebook to buy up both WhatsApp and Instagram proved to have been the wrong call.
And we talked to tech CEOs like Vizio's Bill Baxter, who explained exactly how smart TV manufacturers make their money.
It's about post-purchase monetization of the TV.
It's ads. Check us out every Friday to hear about everything in tech, from new iPhone leaks to breaking down Facebook's ongoing issues of privacy to just me and Paul ranting at each other about the role of the government. And check us out on Tuesdays when I host the interview episode. Subscribe to The Vergecast wherever podcasts are served. We'll see you then.
Yeah, and I looked it up. He was drafted in the 9th round of 2017. And one thing that jumped out at me as I was looking through his numbers, and he threw 50 pitches in the last week. 8 of those were swinging strikes, and 10 of those he caught guys looking for a strike, which it's just nasty.
So he only threw, out of 50 pitches, he only threw 18 strikes?
The other ones were, I think, either foul balls, or I could have also read the numbers wrong, but he was massacring people overall.
I mean, he is downright filthy.
The next player is Ryan Flaherty.
Yeah, and you know, Flaherty's obviously not a prospect. He's a veteran. He was with the Indians in spring training, elected to leave to try to get a free agency, and came back, and the Indians gave him an opportunity for a minor league deal, and he's been tearing the cover off the ball for Columbus. Granted, you're probably supposed to as a 4A type of guy, but yeah, this past week he went 8 for 18 with a double, 6 walks, scored 5 runs at a stolen base, so batted .444 with a .583 on base percentage. So go get him, Flaherty. If Freeman isn't working out, then Flaherty potentially could be our utility guy as we move on through the season.
And he, sorry, I went back because I realized my math was wrong. On Karinchak, it was 14 swinging strikes and 11 strikes looking.
Okay.
So
it's a little bit better.
And 70% strikes overall. So fully half of his pitches were things that just fooled dudes. And then another 20% were foul balls.
Plus, he did have, I should mention with Karinchak, he actually did have 2 groundouts. That doesn't seem possible, but one of them was a drop third. He had a drop third strike. So.
Ah.
So 2 balls were put in play, and those count as strikes as well.
And it is nice to have, to get back to Flaherty, have him as an option.
Yeah, he's a veteran. We know that he's capable. He's played for a bunch of teams over the last few years. So it's good to have that available, as you mentioned, for sure, especially after we've seen that more often statements haven't exactly grabbed the bull by the horns here.
And then our final player to highlight from the entire system is Eli Morgan. And what did we see from him,
Eli,
Brian?
Eli was sensational this past week. He had 2 starts. The first start, he went 5 innings, shutout baseball with 9 strikeouts. So just an absolute beast. And then today he pitched and he went 6 innings, gave up a run, struck out 7. Over the past week in 2 appearances, he went 11 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 3 walks, 16 strikeouts in 2 starts. You have yourself a week. And he was already named the pitcher of the week for last week in the Carolina League. And then he goes out today and pitches 6 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. So I don't know if that'll be pitcher of the week worthy, but I mean, he has been he has actually been the most consistent dominant pitcher in the Indians minor league system to start the season through 3 starts. We've had several other guys that started strong, like Oviedo, Giancarlos Mejia, but then in their 3rd start, they all came down to earth a little bit. Mejia wasn't quite as bad. I think he gave up 3 runs in 5 innings, so it wasn't, you know, atrocious. There might have been 2 runs in 5 innings. Eli Morgan is repeating the year at Lynchburg, He spent about 75% of his season there last year. And I think if there's anybody that gets promoted to Akron early, it's going to be him. Like, he is absolutely smashing right now.
If he has another start like that, where he's just completely overpowering guys, I mean, is it unprecedented that early in the year to move somebody up?
There's been multiple situations, and usually it happens at high A. The last two times that I remember it distinctly was, actually there were three. No, it was two, sorry. But Adam Pletko started at high A like 4 or 5 years ago. And I mean, he could not have had a better start to the season. And he ended up getting promoted to double A pretty quickly. I think it took like maybe 5 or 6 starts. Thomas Pannone had an insane start to his high A about, I think it was the year we traded him for Joe Smith, but he started.
That was his scoreless inning streak, wasn't
it? Yeah. He started the season with 6 or 7 straight scoreless starts. It was in the 40 plus innings. I mean, it was complete dominance. And it continued, actually, after he got promoted to double A. And then I think I remember Julian Merriweather being just downright filthy about 3 or 4 years ago when he was starting at high A. And all three times, the longest anybody stayed was through the All-Star break of the league. And I think that was Merriweather. The other two got promoted before. If Eli keeps this up, I think maybe 1 or 2 more starts and he's in Akron, especially because Akron's right now kind of running, you know, Tanner Tully and a few other guys that could be like long relievers. They don't really have a future in the Indians rotation potentially.
And he'll definitely be someone we're going to have tabs on, which actually brings up a question that I had. As we progress through the season, do you think it would make sense for us to sort of reconfigure the top 10 on the fly, maybe on like a monthly basis? Because if someone like Morgan, who I believe we had ranked in the Let's Go Tribe rankings,
we did not rank him this
year, mowing people down. Did we really? Oh,
I don't think we did. Or if we did, it was really far down. But I don't think we did, even though he was good last year. Like, it was just we added so much young talent that he kind of got lost in the shuffle. I believe he might have been in my best of the rest.
But in general, for that top 10 list, it seems like it'd be kind of fun outside of the guys who are obviously sort of the bona fide top prospects. Maybe the last 3 slots or so make it possible for one of the guys to crack into it.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on that as the season goes. But there's definitely been a few players that I think are making a very good impression. You know, Daniel Johnson, Oscar Mercado, guys that people really weren't familiar with that we got from other places, or also just some people that are, you know, taking that next step, like an Eli Morgan. So I'm very excited to see how our top 10 will evolve as we go.
Well, and speaking of Johnson, what we're going to do now is highlight some of the guys other than the top 5 from the week that also had really, really good performances through some of the different levels. Johnson hit 318, 407, 591 this past week. 3 doubles, a home run, 9 RBIs, 4 walks. He seems pretty locked.
Yeah, his OPS is still about 1,000 or over 1,000 at double A. I don't think anybody else on Akron is even like over 800, or if they are, they're just barely. So, I mean, he is clearly above and beyond the best offensive player on that team. I mean, I think once we kind of get it sorted out in Columbus with a lot of the veterans that are there, I think, you know, you can maybe like a Trace Thompson could be let go or something. There's going to be an opening for Daniel Johnson at AAA at some point, because he was there last year. He had an injury. But he clearly is proving that he's ready for that next step, especially after the way he impressed in spring training as well.
Any other specific players that you want to give a shout out to for their performances?
Yeah, I'll give him a shout out to Oscar Gonzalez. I mean, he has consistently been one of the best hitters in the Indian system all season. And then this past week, he went, I think, 11 for 31 with 3 doubles, a home run, scored 3 runs, had 9 RBIs and a stolen base. The one knock on him has always been he doesn't walk, and that's exactly what happened this week. He did not walk once. The only reason his on-base percentage is not the exact same as his .354 batting average is he got hit by a pitch. So, and he does strike out a lot. So as a guy that is a very aggressive swinger and does not walk, I would like to see him get that K rate down, but he did strike out 11 times out of his 20 non sink non-base hit at-bats this week. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. But Gonzalez is an exciting player. He was like the MVP of the Arizona Rookie League a couple years ago, and he's continued to rake at every level. I think he's had about the highest overall batting average for Indians players that have been in the system for the past 3 or 4 years. Doesn't have any patience whatsoever, though.
And I believe that's how I played when I was still attempting to be a baseball player. I made a lot less contact, though.
I mean, who wants to walk, right? Who wants to walk?
Yeah, so we've got a little bit of time here at the end of our show for some questions that came in. We always ask the day of...
And also...
Oh, go ahead.
I have a couple updates on injuries.
Ooh, yeah. Let's hit that first.
We had two players in the past week in the Indian system get placed on the injured list. Andrew Caliga, he's a AA outfielder. He got placed on the injured list for, I think, a fractured finger or something. So that sucks, but he hopefully will be back soon, or at least down the road. And then Jonathan Loureiro, catcher at Lynchburg, got placed on the disabled list. I don't know what for, but the highlight of Jonathan Loureiro going on the injured list was to replace him. They recalled Sicknarf Loopstock from spring training. So Sicknarf is back, baby.
It is time.
Fear the Narf dog. And then one other injury update. We have an update on somebody about to return from injury. And this is somebody we're very excited about, is Nick Sandlin.
Yes.
Who started the year on the injured, or just he wasn't on any rosters to start the season. People were wondering where he was. He has been in extended spring training, had a little bit of a forearm issue. It seems like that has been dealt with. And he is in Akron right now. I believe he's expected to be activated over the weekend. So keep an eye out for Nick Sandlin to continue that incredible rise that he has had after being drafted in the second round by the Indians last year. He made it all the way to AA. And he is back in Akron to start the 2019 season, should make an appearance out of the pen maybe Saturday or Sunday.
I am pumped to see what he can do.
Yeah, I just want to see him. I want to watch him pitch, because I haven't, you know, I didn't really get to watch him that much last year because all those lower levels, they don't have a lot of video available. But at Akron, I think every game pretty much is televised, Akron and Columbus. So I can watch him come out of the pen at any time. So I'm really excited about that. So now we can move on to viewer questions.
The questions. Like I was saying, every week we reach out on Wednesday morning just to see if there's any questions from our wonderful listeners. One that we got two this week that we're going to take a look at. The first one is at from Akron, Ohio. Why Stamets and Moroff, and now Freeman, Stamets, I think. Why Stamets and Moroff and now Freeman over Yu-Chen Chang? Is not ready, or is it a service time thing?
I don't think it's a service time thing, but I think to start the season, what they wanted to do was Stamets had been at AAA for a long time. They thought they'd give him a shot, and he was known as a defensive first guy, and I think that was a thing that they were kind of more worried about than somebody that can hit a little bit better but doesn't play as good defense. So they went with the veteran minor leaguer that was already on the 40-man roster, and it just clearly didn't work out. I mean, Stamets was awful. He struck out like 60-70% of his plate appearances, had some really ugly at-bats. He did end up getting a little league home run, so, you know, good for him. And then defensively, he did not play well. But I think that was what their line of thinking was, that, you know, he's been at AAA for at least parts of the last three seasons. Let's give him an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then Moroff, I think he doesn't have options, so they didn't want to just release him after they traded for him in the offseason. The other thing is, when they decided to send Stamets down, Francisco Lindor is expected to be activated this weekend. I mean, why call up Yu Chang for three games?
Right.
You know, so that I think that was the reasoning here. So it's likely that they're, because they probably don't want to lose Moroff because he's still pretty young, they're probably going to DFA Freeman when Lindor gets activated, is my expectation.
And if Chang was playing lights out right now, there might be a little bit more pressure, but he's been struggling a little bit to start the season in Columbus.
He hasn't exactly been destroying the baseball. Let me see. He didn't play today, I don't think so. I'd have to look up a little further to see his overall stats, but I think he hit a home run, but for the most part, he hasn't done a whole lot yet. So still heating up a little bit at AAA.
And our next question from Richard K. Bach. Are lefty hitters in the minors being taught how to hit against the big shift? Do the minors use the big shift? To what extent is bunting taught and practiced? What could a decent bunter hit against the defense with no one manning third base? And I know you have some insight here for everyone.
From everything I've heard, they definitely are teaching the shift at the minor league levels. They're shifting a lot. They're going to have to learn either to go the other way or to start bunting or just do what the major league players do and start elevating the ball and hit it over the shift and out of the park. That definitely is happening right now. In terms of bunting, I'd say in minor league baseball, bunting is a lot more important than in the major leagues because of the different rules. A lot of people don't know, but in minor league games, when they go to extra innings, every single inning will start with a man on second base. So typically every single team has their leadoff hitter bunt that guy to third base. Maybe unless it's some super prospect or something, but for the most part, every extra inning game, you better be working on those bunting skills because you need to get that guy over and then get him in. So you definitely see bunts quite a bit in the minor leagues. It's being taught a lot. And if a player was incredible with a bunting, they could hit over 400 easily, if not 500. It's just teams would adapt. They would obviously stop shifting if a guy was just crushing them, getting on base every single time that they shifted on him. But with some players, maybe they're willing to risk a single for a guy that would normally be hitting doubles and home runs.
I've kind of wondered, like, say you had Mike Trout and they were shifting against him or something, or someone with that level of production, how well would he have to hit just bunting to make up for the complete lack of power? Like if he hit 600,
yeah, it would bunting, probably have to be 600. And the thing with some players though is if you're a good base stealer, you get on base, that it can be like a double. You just steal second, like Jose. The second he gets on first base, he's just like, okay, first pitch, I'm out of here. So
yeah, he did that twice on Monday, walked in and stole second.
So I'm loving that. So if Jose could actually bunt, then he'd be getting free doubles and triples every at bat.
Well, hopefully he either starts mashing all the time again, or it'd be nice to see him be able to use that, even if he just whips it out once a game to keep guys a little bit more honest playing against him. Well, I think that's it for this week, unless there is anything else that you wanted to bring up about our prospects.
I think that's about everything I had. I don't have any other crazy factoids or information. So yeah, just keep an eye out. We'll be back next week.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears and video games,
Pittsburgh Batman,
the hell of being trapped in a group text,
unreliable legal advice.
There's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things,
or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Like the time Arkansas decided to use a captured feral hog as a mascot, and it escaped and it wound up killing 7 rattlesnakes, a pig, and a coyote.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.
Unless it is.
Damn it, Ryan.